Members of the senior executive service have had a rough year or two. Now political leaders from both the White House and Congress offer up ways to improve the SES. There's the mundane, the White House is launching a candidate development program, and the punitive, legislation that would make it easier to fire SES members when things go wrong. Today, Federal News Radio launches a special series called Fixing the SES. We'll bring you the voices of those who know the system best, current and former SES members. We start with former acting IRS Commissioner Danny Werfel. He was an SES member before becoming a political appointee. Now he's a consultant. Werfel tells Federal News Radio's Emily Kopp, SES members are older and under more stress than ever.
It's difficult to be a federal employee today. I mean, this should not be news. We've got sequester and government shutdown and hiring freezes and pay freezes and discretionary budgets frozen or declining. And so, you know, when I was at the IRS, as an example, I would talk to so many different people who would say, I used to have 11 people doing this function and now I have three. And in my head, I would say, well, I'm not going to defend the 11 because maybe the 11 might have been too much. I don't know. But I could see very clearly that three wasn't enough. I could see the effects of that, the effects that it was having on the mission and the effects that it was having on the morale of people. So the environment isn't as conducive to retain these people for longer. And then there's other factors at play in terms of why do people aspire to go into the SES? Why do we aspire to be leaders? And right now, I think we have more work to do to balance, I think, the what happens in the event that a mistake is made. There's a lot of attention to the mistakes that are made by SES sometimes, and everybody makes mistakes. And there's a perception that the consequences are extraordinarily significant if you make a mistake, even if it's a small mistake. And so we have to calibrate that a little bit better. We have to find the right mix of accountability when serious mistakes are made or when a series of mistakes are made. But we also have to encourage an environment where people are going to feel like I can flourish here, but I'm going to be allowed to make some mistakes as I try to innovate, as I try to transform. So these are some of the friction points that I think that we can address.
Congress has taken the lead on addressing that last friction point, at least with regards to the Veterans Affairs Department, in enabling the secretary to sort of streamline the firing of SES members. Do you think that that's the right way to go?
I think it all depends on how it's applied. And I'm almost always in favor of greater flexibility for government leaders to shape the organization in the right way to meet mission. Agility is really important because I've seen firsthand that when you don't have the agility to shape the organization, and that could be to remove or demote underperformers. It could be to promote achievers, bring the right talent into the organization. It could be to realign your own organization because the realities that existed when the organization was set up, let's say in the 1990s, are different. All of these things, I'm always a fan of something that provides flexibility and agility. At the same time, it has to be balanced against a set of controls to make sure that as we apply that agility, we're staying true to critical principles of fairness and due process and equity. And I believe that balance is eminently achievable. It's just got to be closely monitored and perfected over time. So my bottom line answer is, yes, I support better tools and authorities to create more agility and flexibility for government leaders to shape their organizations in dynamic times. But at the same time, I support a set of controls that are in place to make sure that those, as they're taking those steps, that fairness and equity and due process are also protected. And it's not an easy balance to achieve, but I think we need to work towards that balance.
You've been an SES member and a political leader. As a political leader, has the SES, both the people and the structure, worked for you, helped you complete the mission that you needed to complete?
I think one of the most important lessons learned for any incoming political appointee is how important the SES leadership is in the organization is to helping them be successful. And what I tell people, and I talk to a lot of people that are coming into government for the first time as political appointees, I say, first things first, trust the SES that are there. Their agenda is the long-term sustainability and progress of the organization. And 999 times out of 1,000, their inspiration and incentives are exactly aligned with yours. And it doesn't matter what party you're in. The day you arrive, not only are they going to be super, super helpful to you in terms of understanding the organization and how to, what levers to pull to reform and transform, but they will be spirited and passionate about the priorities that you set. This, I've seen this happen time and time and time again. And it's always a surprise to people, but it shouldn't be, because the people that are in these government agencies have, you know, that's their job. That's, this is, I often say, it's in the brochure.
The SES is the continuous thread. What's the way forward for the SES? You talked about some of the challenges, among them things that can't be stopped, such as people getting older. So what do you see as the way forward or the fix?
That I haven't figured out a solution for yet. I think there are some obviously practical steps that we need to take. There's a lot of ingredients to it. First of all, I think we have to change culture around public service, and the pendulum needs to swing back a little bit more towards celebration of what the federal workforce does on a day-to-day basis. Certainly when something goes wrong, we have to address it. We have to publicize it so that we can learn from it. But it's got to be balanced against the reality of the sacrifice and the work and the professionalism that goes on 999 times out of 1,000. And we got to get that back into the dialogue. Not just, and who your audience is important. Look, what I'd love there to be, you know, that we have this thing called the SAMMYs, the Service for America Awards, that the Partnership for Public Service runs every year. And it celebrates the extraordinary achievements of some of the government's SES. It's just an amazing, inspiring event to see what these people have been able to accomplish, the number of lives they saved, the number of criminals they've put away, the number of dollars they save for taxpayers, and how they have helped wounded warriors. And it just goes on and on. It is extraordinarily inspirational. And you walk out of that ceremony thinking, this should be covered by the networks. This is the Oscars. This is what I wish, 100 million Americans were watching and seeing, because the stories are really, really, really important. That's kind of a pipe dream. I get that that's probably not going to happen. But that story could be told to universities, to MBAs and Masters in Public Policy students and law students and med students and people coming out of science degrees. It could be told in Silicon Valley, where we have talented people that are figuring out solutions to technology that can come in and join our workforce in technology. We have to find the areas where we want to bring talent into the government, and we have to tell it to ourselves. And that's part of the change in culture that I'm describing that needs to happen. I also think that there are, things that we need to look at, like pay. We need to make sure that, look, we have doctors and scientists and accountants and lawyers, and we have a need for all these people in the federal government. And, we want to make sure that we are attracting the right talent to do this work, to help us control our diseases, or to help us, provide medical care to our veterans. And so we have to kind of make sure that we are being competitive.
In its last 2 years, what should the Obama administration be doing?
The world is changing very rapidly for all these federal agencies. And so we should be making sure that we are understanding that and analyzing that and then comparing it to the skill sets that we have within our workforce, so that when the new administration comes on board, they're not spending months and months and months doing this analysis, but as part of the stewardship of the last 2 years of administration into an incoming administration, they're handing them, the new administration, an objective and reliable set of analytics that says, here's what's happening, whether it's in financial regulation or homeland security or in supporting the warfighter or in, as I've used before, food safety, airline safety, all of these different issues. Here's the dynamic situation that's changing the impact of our mission, both threats and opportunities, the strengths and weaknesses that we have. We've analyzed it for you. And now here's the organization that you're inheriting. And here are our strength points and here are our weak points. Here are the flexibilities that you have. Here are the flexibilities that you don't have. So that the new administration mm-hmm. can hit the ground running in terms of repositioning their organizations to meet these dynamic challenges.